Hello, welcome along. So we had our first winter break in the Premier League this weekend. Only half played, we've got half over a staggered period. Do you think it's the right time to have one? Is it the right thing to do?
Yes and no. I feel like the Premier League, the players get tired, but they don't play as much as the Championship, League One and League Two. And League One, League Two and Championship don't have a winter break. And with the amount of money the Premier League players earn compared to the other leagues, you'd kind of think, well, just get on with it. You're not playing as much. You're earning way more money. Mm-hmm. And you don't hear anything from the Championship, League One and League Two complaining. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
What are your thoughts, Dan?
Just what Xander said. I don't think they need it, really. It just stuns the progress. It allows the new managers to come in. It allows them to implement the tactics a bit more on the players. So it's a good standpoint for the upcoming managers coming in.
You know what I think is interesting about it? I think it's interesting that they haven't gone for a whole break where there aren't any fixtures at all. So yesterday, if it had gone ahead, Man City would still have played at home on Sky Sports at 4 o'clock on Super Sunday. And I think that's what's driving it. More so than, yes, well, the league will allow you to have a winter break, will allow you to have a week off, will allow you to recoup, because players are tired. I disagree slightly. You look at Liverpool, they're in every competition going, they've been around the world, the players played all summer, they've not had a break. The style of play that Jurgen Klopp makes them play is demanding. But I think it's boiling down to TV rights, TV money, and TV companies having too much of a say.
Yeah, I think that if, for example, Sky Sports, they want a fixture on TV, it's more likely to happen than not.
So I watched a programme yesterday, and it was on in the morning on Sky, and they were talking about the winter break, and the presenter said, don't worry though, because we've still got our beloved Premier League on this afternoon, live on Sky Sports. And it just hit me at that point. I thought, that's exactly what it is. It's so that Sky Sports still get their beloved money spinner and their income there, and it's kind of everything else almost takes second place to it. We did have some games. So we had Everton Palace on Saturday lunchtime, I think that one was. Everton won 3-1 at home. Anything to write home about in that one?
Benteke finally scored for Palace.
He broke his duck.
Yeah, he almost got a brace, but Pickford made some good saves. Obviously, Everton went behind, I think, and brought it back.
He made an error though, didn't he, Pickford? Because there's been more talk about him being England's number one goalie. I don't know if you saw the gaffe that he made. He probably should have saved it. Do you think he is still England's number one keeper?
I don't know. Pope's really good. I think Henderson's up and coming. And Foster, I know he's old, but if Foster was younger, I think he'd be number one.
You're shaking your head, Dan. You disagree?
Foster and Henderson, definitely.
Yeah.
For the Euros, I think.
I think Henderson, and that will kind of move us on nicely then to the game that was on yesterday. Sheffield United obviously went 1-0 down at home to Bournemouth, and it was a dramatic late winner. Sheffield United on a bit of a roll.
Yeah, they're doing well. No one thought about it. They're doing like a Wolves last year, but just with a bit more effect. So.
What do you think? Do you think they'll keep it up? Do you think they'll finish in the top four?
I feel like Chris Wilder, he's got the backing of the fans, and I think once the manager's got the backing of the players, which he's also got, and the backing of the fans, I feel like, there's not much why they can't keep it up.
And incidentally, he's a manager who doesn't want a winter break. He's come out this weekend, hasn't he, and said, nah, we should just get on with it, which was the point that you made. What about in the Cup then? Because the next round of the FA Cup, the games go midweek, so there'll be no Premier League games that are rearranged. Obviously, now moving forward, there won't be any replay. So Tottenham had a replay last week. That was documented against Southampton. That was the last replay that there would be. Is that part of the problem and maybe feeding into this idea for the winter break, the no winter break?
I don't know, because a lot of, if you look at top flight teams, when they up to the quarterfinals, they play a rotated squad, don't they?
Mm.
So I don't think it makes that much of an impact. It allows the youngsters to get a run on the pitch, so I don't think it makes too much impact.
What about the people who are arguing now that they shouldn't be playing the youngsters and that that's disrespectful to the cup? But the reason they play the youngsters is to give the first teamers a break. So are we just going round and round in a circle there?
If you look at, obviously, bigger teams will also play little teams in the FA Cup and that. But the little teams, they don't have any break in that, but they're still putting out their top team because they want to make an effort. So I don't really know.
I think there have been some lower league teams, League One and League Two, seems they've been grumbling as well about the replays. If it's not a money spinner, if you're, you know, away at Old Trafford for a replay, then you're going to take that, aren't you? But if it's not and it's just someone in your division and you've got to then play them twice, I think they are starting to make noises now around the fact that their players need a break as well. So as we move forward into the season then, we're almost at a point now where we can start to make some predictions. So the Manchester City game was called off yesterday, and the impact on that is that now the earliest date that Liverpool could have won it is going to change, because Man City are going to have this kind of game in hand almost, she says, using inverted commas. We're all in agreement then that the title's done? We don't see a change at the top of the league?
No. Yeah, it's done.
It's done. So we can move on from that one. What about the top four then? As it stands now, everyone's beating everyone. No one's seemingly making a breakaway for it and looking like that they're going to be nailed on for it. Maybe apart from City then, if they're guaranteed second. What do you think? What's your top four looking like?
I think with the upcoming fixtures coming up, a lot of the top four teams like Leicester and Chelsea definitely are going to have to win this weekend just to...
Well, they're all playing each other grip. Now, aren't they? Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel as if I feel like Leicester will clinch it, but it's weird with Chelsea because obviously they argued about the transfer ban, they got it rescinded, and now they didn't make any signings, yeah. Which is really confusing.
It is.
But Sheffield United look to be climbing up the table, along with Tottenham. They're starting to come back up, but yeah.
So, but like you just said, with the break, if Sheffield United, they've got like a small squad, haven't they?
Yeah.
And they can only play, it's like Wolves, they only had like 13 players that played, outfield players that played like last year.
Mm.
With them playing like the FA Cup and the Champions League or Europa League, yeah. It's going to absolutely knacker the players, isn't
absolutely.
It?
Absolutely, and when you're in the Europa like they are, it's Thursday, then it's Sunday, and so you're on that kind of cycle. So are we saying City are going to finish second then? Make that prediction.
Yeah.
Leicester third. So it's just the one spot up for grabs. So here we are then. It's the 10th of January. Can you nail a team to fourth spot then? What's your prediction?
I don't know. Look at the table. Obviously, I'd love to say United, but I don't see it happening. I feel like it's between Tottenham and Sheffield United. However, Everton, they're in seventh position right now.
Okay. Yeah. What do you think?
I don't see... Don't see Arsenal getting there.
No,
so I think it's just going to stay the same.
You think it'll be as it is, and you didn't pick one, so you got to pick one. Tottenham or Sheffield United?
I'm going to say Sheffield United.
Are you? Yeah. Wow. Okay, I'm going to go Tottenham, but I think a late surge from Chelsea.
I'm saying it's staying as it is.
You're going to go as it is now. Okay. Other end of the table then. Who do we see surviving? Who do we see it being too late for? We've got some teams at the moment. I mean, West Ham yesterday, it's almost a blessing in disguise because their form at the moment, the bottom of the form guide is shocking. They're in free fall. Norwich, do they look to have gone?
Norwich have gone. Yeah, they've no life in them anymore. In the first month, I'd say they were doing well.
Mm.
But
and they were scoring.
Yeah,
but once you take that away, it's hard, isn't it, in the Premier League? What, yeah. What do you think for Norwich gone then?
I feel like, obviously Norwich, I feel like they're definitely gone down now. And they've got to prepare for that. Just try play for positivity. But I don't know, 18th, 19th, they're both on level on points and 2 points behind 16th.
So who we got there?
West Ham, Watford, 18th and 19th. And then Bournemouth are in 16th with Villa 17th.
Mm. Bournemouth had a tricky run of form as well.
Yeah.
But they're starting to... They had a couple of wins, so I think they'll stay clear, and Watford as well.
They'll be gutted with the way they lost yesterday, though, won't they, to kind of lose in that style. Watford, in free fall for a long time, had a little bit of a resurgence, and now it seems to have gone back to how it was. I don't know, this could be the season we lose them.
They're winning games left, right and centre, and they started to put in some good performances against them big teams.
Mm.
But now I think they've just got a bit complacent, and I think the winter break might help them find the missing piece.
You need the break from the momentum when it's bad momentum, don't you, sometimes? So do you think it will stay as it is, or do we think we're going to see a change? I don't know about Villa, you know.
Villa will clinch it. I think Villa, they've got some good players in that squad, and I feel like as we get closer to the end of the season, they'll start, you know, performing. I just feel that can see West Ham crawling out the relegation zone, but going down, it's quite hard to choose one. Bournemouth and Brighton aren't safe, and It's quite hard to choose.
There's not many points in it, really, is there?
No. I think West Ham, judging on their, they've got a massive stadium. If they go down, it's going to absolutely annihilate them.
Yeah.
Well, not like, they're still going to get a good attendance, but sales are just going to be going down.
But even at that ground, when there is a good attendance, it's not a good ground for football. It's not built to be a football ground. The atmosphere is not what it was. They can blow all the bubbles they like. They're not recreating Upton Park. And I just feel like you'll see lots and lots of empty seats. It will feel empty. It will sound empty. That's going to impact the players.
Yeah, it happened to Sunderland. They went down. They've got that big stadium. Mm. You're used to having big crowds. They go down. The crowds aren't the same. They've still got a good attendance. It's not the same. Obviously, they don't have the TV rights, can't help pay the stadium. And then, obviously, that takes a toll on the type of players they've got in the team.
Absolutely.
Because big-name players will want to leave, play first-flight football. They're going to have to bring in players that aren't that type of calibre. And Sunderland paid for it and went down twice.
It's the money as well, isn't it? It's not just that you have those big players want to leave. You might have to get them off your wage bill because you haven't got the money incoming anymore to keep them up, to pay them.
Because West Ham, most of their players, if they do go down in the Championship, would leave because they won't want to be in the Championship.
Absolutely. And then you have to sell them almost at that cut price because the demand won't be as it was and you're in a never-ending cycle almost. So if those teams leave the league, then what about coming up the other way? So we've got a bit of a promotion chase on. Leeds, yet again, they're just known as the bottle jobs every single year. Each year that passes, I think it's 15, 16 years now that they've been out of the Premier League, or 13, I'm not sure. What's happening with them? Why can't they just sustain a run, and why do they always throw it away?
I feel like at the start of the season, everyone goes, oh yeah, Leeds are coming up. I feel like they play that type of football which makes you think they're coming up and they just take the foot off the gas, I guess, and kind of think it's over when it's not. And
I think
they've got to pay for it.
If it don't go up this year, Marcelo Bielsa will go and a lot of their players will go.
Right.
Because they've been in that hunt for getting in the Premier League, haven't they? So I reckon it'll take a big toll if they don't go up this year.
Can you see Bielsa being snapped up by anyone else, maybe?
He's a good manager, I think. And I don't know. Can't really think of a team that comes to mind.
Maybe a Premier League team, yeah. Someone who gets rid of a manager and wants maybe to give him a go at that level. If he can't quite get the team there, you know, has he got it in him to perform well in the Premier
League? Definitely at this stage of the season as well. You can start, for a Norwich or something, they're going down, aren't they?
Yeah.
So it'd be good for see what he can do with it, really.
Yeah, maybe, and planning for the next stage almost. So West Brom then, are they coming back up?
Yeah. I think it's quite smart. Obviously, they tried to come up last season, but it's quite smart. They stay down a season, try to sort everything like with the financial status out, and then they go again the following season, and it's working. And I feel like they'll be back in the Premier League.
The thing is, they've got a good manager as well, haven't they? Slaven Bilic.
Yeah.
So if you get a good manager, a good team behind you, you can go far.
And someone who knows the business of the Premier League, knows the ins and outs of it. Then you go to the lottery of the playoffs, and it's often undecided until the very last day of the season, that particular group of four down. Any team that you fancy is putting a run together?
Preston are up there, and that's quite surprising, but I feel like Nottingham, Forest, I feel...
Well, they had a good win at the weekend.
Yeah, I do feel like... I feel like Fulham might overtake Leeds, and then Nottingham will probably win the playoffs.
Do you think Fulham are going to catch Leeds up?
Yeah, they're on level on points right now, just goal difference separating them.
Okay.
I think it's a bit of a wild one, but I think Nottingham and Derby will get there.
Ooh, that'd be a nice tie. That'd be a nice final to have, if that's what we get at Wembley. Xander's shaking his head, he doesn't agree.
Yeah, it's only because he's got Derby history, wouldn't he?
So you've got ulterior motives for wanting Derby to get there. Well, no, you know, Wayne Rooney there, again, he's somebody who knows the Premier League. He could single-handedly maybe get them there if he has to be in games when he's playing. Okay then, so we come to the next round of Premier League fixtures this weekend, and we've got a Friday night game that looks, on paper, quite tasty. Wolves-Leicester.
Well, it can be a bit tasty, but it depends how the teams line up, isn't it, really, and how they play. Because it could be a 0-0 ball draw, or it could have a bit of life in it.
I think it's got the look of having a bit of life in it.
It's one of those matches that, as a neutral, you'd probably want to tune into, because both, like, exciting attacking teams, they've both got a stable midfield and stable defence. I feel like it's either going to be really high scoring or it's going to end up as a draw.
Yeah, if it is 0-0, I'm after you two now, because I'm going to watch that thinking there's going to be a lot of goals in it. So then we've got some of the teams not playing this weekend. We've got Liverpool, they're away at Norwich on Saturday night. After everything we've just said about Norwich on this podcast, and we've barely talked about Liverpool because we've agreed they're going to win it. Goals in that one, do we think?
I do feel like Norwich, they might have a little bit of a blip, but 3-1 maybe, Norwich just gets that little goal at the end. Nothing to shout home about, but just, yeah.
Yeah, routine win for the Reds then.
Yeah.
You in agreement?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. And then we move forward to Monday Night Football, which 2 or 3 years ago would be an absolute top of the table clash, and at the moment it's two teams scrapping it out, I think, Chelsea and United. It's at Stamford Bridge, is it?
Yeah.
Does that make a difference to Man United being away from home at the moment?
I don't know. We've played Chelsea twice already. Once at Old Trafford, once at Stamford Bridge.
Old Trafford.
Beaten 4-0 at Old Trafford starting in the season, and then in the cup at Stamford Bridge, we beat them. I think it was 2-0. Yeah.
You think it could be go the same way then?
I don't know, because obviously it's in the league. It'll be a bit more intensive style of football, but we've no longer got Rashford, who's injured. I'm excited to see how Ighalo performs, but I don't know, could be a draw.
Yeah, your thoughts on that one?
I think the both managers are a bit inconsistent, but we can say that about most of the top half. So I think if it'd be another big test for Frank Lampard than the young England players, so it'll...
A lot of young England players being pitted against each other in that game, really. I know a couple of injuries, but looks to be one where that there's an opportunity for maybe someone to come out of that as a shining talent. And for this part of the podcast, we are pleased to welcome our first ever guest onto the show, Mr. Rowland. Thank you for joining. I'm going to start by asking you to tell us a little bit about yourself in terms of the team that you follow and your reasons why.
Okay, like I said, I'm Mr. Rowlands, and delighted to join the podcast today. The team that I follow is Manchester United. I'm born in Manchester, and my father was born in Manchester and actually grew up about half a mile from the stadium. So he always went when he was a boy, and then he started taking me somewhere around the late 70s and the 80s, and I've been following Man United ever since.
So what was your football background like when you were younger and that? So,
well, I played a lot of football. I played for a team called Denton Juniors. I played in a very good team, probably the best team, junior team in Manchester at the time. We had a number of players who went on to lower league careers. And then I progressed through into adulthood, where I was playing at a reasonable standard myself, at interleague for the league. But I was playing on Sundays because... At the same time, I then decided I wanted to carry on watching Man United with my dad, so Saturdays was dedicated to going to the football with my dad.
Yeah.
What's been your favourite game that you've been to?
Favourite game ever is the I was there moment. I went to the Champions League final in 1999 when Manchester United were trailing against Bayern Munich 1-0 and Sheringham scored... And then Solskjaer scored the winner. And I was stood behind the goal where we scored from those two corners to win the European Cup in injury time. And probably I'll never have a better moment following football, Willa, than that. So it will always be my favourite point. But also, I was stood next to my dad and my best friends.
Yeah. What was your first ever match like watching football?
Do you know, I don't... actually know what my first game was. I think it might have been Manchester United Sunderland somewhere in the 70s. What I can remember are 1979 FA Cup final, where Manchester United played Arsenal. They were 2-0 down, they pulled it back to 2-2 and then lost it 3-2 in the last minute. And I remember that because my dad hit the roof and it was carnage, but we watched that at home. And I can remember going to the Milk Cup final against Liverpool in 1983, when Liverpool robbed United. They should have had the goalkeeper sent off. We were winning and we lost that game, and I cried. I cried on my way home, and my dad said to me, "It's okay, son, we'll be back." And I went to the FA Cup final against Brighton and then also to the replay. So my first memories of actually going to the stadium, although I went to Old Trafford, I can't remember exactly which my first game was at Old Trafford, but I do very much remember those first trips to Wembley. And in particular, we won 4-0 against Brighton in the replay, and that was just an amazing night. It was also Matt Busby's birthday that night.
What's been your favourite moment in all your career?
Playing or watching?
Should we do both?
Playing? Because I think you covered watching.
Playing. There's probably two points that I'd refer to. One, when I was playing at a good standard, I was playing for the Interleague under-21s, so it was the highest standard I went on to play, and we were in the cup, and it was 2-2. I was playing centre midfield, and in extra time, my legs had gone a little bit, and the manager put me up front because he'd used all of his subs, and I scored 2 to put us through to the next round, and that was in a stadium, so I was actually playing in a stadium that day, and we went all the way through to the final that year, which was fantastic. But scoring those 2 goals, because I wasn't normally a goal scorer, I used to be a centre-back, so I particularly enjoyed that. My second moment is a little bit of a tongue-in-cheek, it's a funny moment, but it was in the same stadium where I was playing, and the match was being refereed by my father, and he sent me off. And it was I only got sent off 3 times, I think, in my entire playing career. And one of them was by my dad, but there was a tunnel. So I got sent off and I got to walk down the tunnel and kick the bucket on the way because I was a little bit upset. So that was a fun moment. When I look back now, my dad and I still have a good giggle about the fact that he sent me off. I still think that I shouldn't have been sent off. He definitely thinks that I should have. He said I led with my elbow, but I don't think I did.
Yeah, what's your favourite ever player that's played the game?
Oh, Cantona, for me. There are lots of great players, and I've been really lucky to watch Ronaldo when he played at Old Trafford. I've seen greats like, for me, Brian Robson and Roy Keane. Ruud van Nistelrooy, I think, deserves a special mention because he was something else. But my favourite ever player, and the player that changed my life watching football, was the moment Cantona walked onto the pitch for United. And I can remember his debut, and the television cameras were just in front of us in the ground, and you could see on the little monitor that Cantona was warming up in the tunnel to come on against Man City. And he came on, then he started, I think, the next week and scored against Chelsea, I think. And he just went from strength to strength. And he could do things with the ball that nobody else, you know, some of the passes he picked out, you just couldn't imagine. Some of the goals, and then the arrogance when he scored that goal, and he'd kind of look at the crowd as if to say, "What? So what? It's me." And one day my dad turned round to me and he said, "You know what, I think Cantona is probably better than best." And that, for my dad to say that, was a huge compliment to Cantona. But for me, Eric was the king and still is.
What are your thoughts on VAR?
Bin it. I've watched football for the best part of 40 years now, and I've had decisions go for us, I've had decisions go against us, but at the end of the day, that's part of the game, and there is a degree of human error within that. But VAR at the moment just seems to be so clinical. When you're talking about an offside decision that is the breadth of a hair, you talk about somebody's heel being offside, that, I think, they've got the interpretation wrong. For me, if you're going to use VAR to improve any sport, and technology has improved things like tennis and cricket, but with football and with the offside in particular, I think they've got it the wrong way round. And I think if any part of you is onside, you're on. And if they did that, maybe VAR would be a bit better. It may be the benefit of the doubt to the forward, and then defenders wouldn't be trying to push that line so much, and we wouldn't be talking about a heel. Would be talking about, yes, they were onside, and that's fine, and then if they're entirely off, they're off. So I think that would improve it. But apart from goal line technology, which is a non, you know, it's, there's no argument, and similar to how technology is used in cricket, I think VAR's probably left alone and let us enjoy the game and the moments and the wrong decisions and everything else. Because when you're in the stadium and you have a moment and then it comes up on the screen, checking for VAR, it's a bit ridiculous. And I get there's a new excitement with that, but it's not the same. For me, when I was you know, a young boy, when the ball hit the back of the net, it was the greatest sensation ever. And I've been in on the Stretford end, behind the goal, I've seen Brian Robson score, and I imagine now, if that was the case, and the ball hits the back of the net, and then you're not excited, you're immediately looking up to see whether it's a VAR decision or not. So I think we're losing something of the game. Yeah. So I'd bin it. Get rid entirely.
And do you think the discussions as well, because they're most of the things that we discuss on the podcast, aren't they? We have the conversations about the decisions, and almost VAR takes that away, doesn't it? Because you can't have the argument.
Yeah. What do you think of United nowadays? Like, yeah.
It's quite hard watching United at the moment for me. I was there in the 80s when, although we weren't the best team, we still had ambition and we're still hoping to go on. You know, there were some bad days. It wasn't great watching in the early 80s under Dave Sexton. But then under Atkinson, even though, you know, we held the highest we ever got to was second, it was still exciting, it was still enjoyable. I'd always loved my team and I'd never seen them win the league, but that was fine. Having watched them through all of the Ferguson years, where I see the club at the moment is that on the field and off the field, it's going wrong. And the result of that, actually, it's really frustrating. I don't mind losing a game of football. That's part of the game. But what I've experienced over the last few years seems to be the team not necessarily caring. There's been a lack of investment in the squad, and that's shown on the field. Players that I don't really anticipate are good enough for Manchester United have stayed much longer, you know, perhaps should never have joined in the first place. And then to top all of that off, you've got Man City and Liverpool. Yeah. Not only are they both winning, which is fair enough in its own right, but they're both playing scintillating football. They're both playing the kind of football that I'd love to watch. So when I go to Old Trafford and I just see so many frustrations, I don't think Solskjaer is the right person for the job. I think the way he's got us playing, it's still very pedestrian. You've got James, who's got lots of pace, but the ball is never played into space for him to run onto. It's played to his feet. You've got Martial, who's a good finisher, but he's not making runs in round the back. He's coming towards the ball, therefore being expected to hold it up. We've got so many injuries, but we haven't put enough into the squad either. Which means that, you know, at the moment we're struggling to get anywhere near the top six, and I think for Manchester United to struggle to even be in the top six is, you know, well, it's ridiculous. But no one deserves, you don't have a God-given right to win, and you've just got to hope that better days around the corner, don't you?
Yeah.
So you've touched on Solskjaer there. Xander's a Manchester United fan as well. You've been quite vocal on the podcast saying that you think he should be given time. Having heard that, do you still think that?
Yeah, I still think he needs time, yeah.
And what is it then about, what does he need to do to change the style of play or to make the team back to what they were before?
He needs bodies, like, he needs players that suits his style of play. You can't change it in 1 year, you can't change it in two, so I think come three seasons' time we'll see an improvement.
Are you still excited about the signings?
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
Do you think, though, because one of my reflections, when I'm at Old Trafford, if it's 0-0 at half-time and my dad says to me, what do you think Solskjaer will change to win this game? And genuinely, I love Solskjaer as a player, but genuinely, my response was, I don't think he knows how to. And I don't think he knows how to influence a game, to win a game of football. So he's a nice guy. I don't particularly think he presents well in press conferences. But on the side of the pitch is where he's got to do most of his job. And I don't see enough of that. What do you think about that?
I feel like he's still quite a young manager. And I feel once he gets that bit of experience, it could change. And he's still got Ferguson helping him out. And then obviously Phelan that's worked with Ferguson. I feel like, yeah, they should, like, yeah.
His in-game management, do we think that Solskjaer is has the tactical understanding and the coaching ability to change a game of football, and ultimately in the games where you draw in with Wolves or Sheffield United or Aston Villa and so on, why can't Solskjaer get more out of that team?
I think he leaves it too little too late as well, like substitution wise. He'll, what, 80th minute, he'll bring someone on. I think you bring someone on 10 minutes earlier, you've got more chance of changing it. But yeah, I think you need to trust your players, but you trust them sometimes a bit too much, especially when they're tired. And I think you just need to keep changing it and go for it instead of trying to defend the points we've already got. So, yeah.
You talked about feeling, didn't you, as part of that, and it's like, you know, what influence should feeling be having then?
I feel like he's worked with Ferguson, he knows how like the club should run, and I feel like obviously Solskjaer's the head manager, but I think feeling should like step up and take control. Yeah. So.
I think Solskjaer's tactics are very outdated to the modern style of football, and I think that's why he's not connecting with the fans so much.
I think that's a really good point. I think that what he's trying to do is play counter-attacking football, which is largely, you know, for an extent, what Manchester United were built on. We're used to playing against teams that sit deep, but we always have a little bit more about us. And Solskjaer seems to be, he's trying to go back to what he perceives to be is in the club's DNA. But the point you've made is that now dated? Ferguson was managing now, would he be playing the same way that Solskjaer is playing? And I don't think he would. So Solskjaer's trying to implement a strategy that was within the United DNA, but I think football's moved forward, and what you've seen from City and Liverpool, and to some extent some other teams at times as well, but is entirely different. That goes back to the first point though, is I just don't know whether Solskjaer has got the knowledge to do it.
I feel like in the final third especially, United are being very sloppy with the way they're playing and trying to attack as well. And like looking at recent years, it's very different to how they were under Alex Ferguson. So I don't know. I think maybe given time, he could implement his own style. But would you rather give him that time, or would you try and just get rid of him now and hope for a new manager just to implement some new fresh tactics into the United?
I think he's had the time that he deserves. Personally, I respect that a lot of United fans do think Solskjaer's not the problem. They think that the problem is higher up in the club, and therefore to let him invest in players. There is an element of that that's true, but Solskjaer sanctioned the selling of Lukaku. Now, I don't think Lukaku was particularly great for United, but we haven't got a recognised centre-forward really at this moment in time. And it goes back to Martial is making runs in the wrong direction. Lukaku would hold that middle, and against those teams that sit deep, Lukaku was an asset really. They're the games that people used to say he was a flat track bullet, because he would score against the lower teams, but it's the lower teams that we're struggling to beat. So probably in hindsight, you look back now and say, well, unless we'd have replaced Lukaku, we should have kept hold of him, but we didn't.
And you've talked about Rashford a lot, haven't you, and how much they're going to miss him during the spell he's out injured.
Yeah, I feel like we kind of rely on him a bit too much, like seeing his age, and that we don't really have that player like that's like Rashford, because we rely on him a lot. We need a player that's quite similar to him so we can carry on playing the style of football we do.
Yeah, but again, lack of investment perhaps, you know, is the answer going spending, you know, a loan signing from China? You know, time will tell. It might prove to be great for this season, but we shouldn't be in this position.
I feel as if like the player management isn't that good either, both on and off the pitch. And like we signed Ashley Young on contract with Phil Jones and that, and they didn't really start that much, but we let Ander Herrera go out on a free, which always like confuses me why we would let one of our key players go on a free but not sign. Well, and then we'll sign Ashley Young on a contract extension and let him go.
Mismanagement of the contracts, wasn't it?
Yeah.
From Ed Woodward, I would say. But again, just a lack of investment in the squad, relying on some of the younger players. But there are some other good younger players. There are some good midfielders within the club that have not yet had the opportunity to come through. Because back to your earlier question though, around how you feel about watching United at the moment, is all of those frustrations, isn't it?
Yeah.
But do you think, Joe, that the new signing of Bruno Fernandes, will that help the front three as well, by having a good number 10 role just to play the balls through? So do you think will he have a big impact?
It should have. You'd think so, but the first thing I would say is, I think Bruno Fernandes probably not quite a 10 in the same way as some others. Mata is capable of doing that. But the way that we play, and what did, in Bruno Fernandes' first game, what did Solskjaer do in the second half? He pulled him deeper, which is what he's also done with Pogba. Now, Pogba's got lots of skill, but if you don't play him in the right areas of the park, then he's not going to pick that killer pass.
Yeah.
Second half, Fernandez was playing deep, and for the same reason, whilst he had more touches than anybody else and looked to be a good player, if Solskjaer then plays him kind of as a six, in, you know, a five, just in front of the two centre-backs, rather than on the edge of the box, then it's not going to solve the problem. So that would tell me whether Solskjaer again, and Phelan and so on, whether they've got the understanding of how to get the best out of somebody like that, who he's scored something like 60-odd goals in the last few years from midfield, 100-odd assists. I think, you know, he's got fantastic stats, albeit in the Portuguese league. Still demonstrates that he's a, you know, yeah, a very good player. It's now up to Solskjaer to see whether we can get the best out of him.
How do you think Solskjaer fits in with, do you like the new managers, like the young upcoming managers in the Premier League, how do you think he fits in with all them newcomers?
Well, I don't think he's one or the other. He's not an old experienced head, and I don't think he's as young and inexperienced as we might think. Let's remember, it was Solskjaer that took Cardiff down how many years ago? 4 or 5 years ago. So he didn't pull up any trees there. He's been over to Norway and done a reasonable job in the Norwegian league. But where's his credentials to manage Manchester United? He could manage Winterton Rangers, but is he of the level to manage at Manchester United? And sadly, for me, I just think, no, you know, I love him. He scored the goal in my favourite ever game. But it doesn't mean he's good enough to manage Manchester United. But that said, I don't know who is at the moment.
And do you think that'll ruin his legacy at United, having a bad managerial spell?
Not the fans who go to the games, I think, will always respect Solskjaer. And United fans have always had a good relationship with past players and past managers. Even when Moyes had returned, you know, he still got a round of applause. If Mourinho comes back onto the sideline, they still get a round of applause. And there's always an affection from United fans. Players that have left and have gone on to play for City or have gone on to play for Chelsea, Mark Hughes, when he came back, still gets a warm reception. So I don't think Solskjaer can damage his legacy because he did too much. You know, what he achieved,
yeah,
will always be respected. But there's a lot of United fans who are just scratching their head now, thinking he's just making odd decisions. His press conferences don't fill you with confidence. He doesn't seem to make the right substitutions. And all of that, to me, leads to probably had enough time, and maybe at the end of the season there might be an amicable thank you and a shake hands, and in comes Pochettino.
Ooh.
And if that happens, we'll get you on as a guest again to
you
give your thoughts on that. Right, thank you very much for joining
us. You're welcome. Thank you. Enjoyed that.
Thank you.